The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcast Beyond. I didn't even look at what episode this is because that's just how we're starting this show. I'm the host today. My name is Mark Medina. As you can see, I'm wearing a tie because I'm the host, and the host always wears a tie. Dornbush always is wearing a tie in the episodes, and so I figured I'd get all dressed up and snazzy. Jada, what's wrong?
This chaos. I just cannot take it. I'm going to take over. I'm going to be hosting. This is podcast episode 760. Don't put that tie.
Yeah, you know what, Red? Lose the tie. Lose the tie. That's
it's
it.
Just, this it's is, too formal. It's too much. Come on. Our people don't want it. That's not what they want to see. They don't care about the tie. But Mark, go ahead and tell us how we're getting started. What do we got on dock today? I guess we should introduce our third new chair for the day.
Yeah, so we have Tyler Robinson here, someone I've never talked to in my life, but he's here on the podcast with us. Because, you know, if you're looking at Podcast Beyond like 10 years ago and then you're looking at it now and you're like, what happened to this podcast? Bro, I don't know. I don't know how we ended up here, but we're here and we're going to make the best of it. Tyler, so for the people that don't know who you are, myself included, what do you do here at IGN?
Hi, yeah, my name is Tyler Robertson. I am a social media coordinator / producer. I was invited by Jada, who I talk to pretty often, so that's kind of how I got on.
Almost daily.
Jada's vouching for you.
I am. So if there's any anger in the comment sections, just, you know, send me a happy face. I don't know. That's how we handle angry comments. Just send a happy face because then I'll know you're actually upset. But it won't mess with me. So
if Tyler steps out of line, we're coming for Jada. And then obviously, yeah, Jada Griffin's here. My co-host, the only person that I recognize today. So that's good.
Mark doesn't recognize anybody else today, even his wife.
I don't know anybody.
He is face blind today. So it's totally fine.
This is nothing bad against Tyler. Tyler, you're awesome. Yes, from what I know about you, which is your Twitter handle, which is Tyler's New Groove. It's great first impression, but so it was supposed to be Matt Kim, and he had to drop out this morning. He's jet lagged. He only slept for an hour. So I was like, you know what, dude, don't worry about it. I don't need you falling asleep on the podcast,
man.
And then you find out that everyone's busy. I don't know what they're all doing, but everyone's very busy. And we didn't even mention that Dornbush isn't here because he's at the vet. He doesn't have an animal as far as I know of. It's just San Francisco healthcare. That's where he was able to get an appointment. So he's, he's at the vet.
I mean, I've got my appointment after the show. So
oh, good.
I'm trying to find the camera. You there
and,
we go.
You and Dornbush will high five.
Yes. We'll high five at the vet today. That's, you know, that's the plan. So
make sure he's really hard though.
No, yeah. Definitely going to be.
Oh, exactly. Right, Dornbush is going to re-break your hand. What's funny about this episode is you would think, okay, you know what? Let's just do a chaotic, fun episode where we just talk about whatever. There's actually a ton of news. Dornbush is cursed. Every Tuesday, me, Jada, and Dornbush have a meeting where we talk about how there's no news to talk about on the podcast. That is not the case today. There's so much stuff. We had a lot yesterday. And then even more dropped today. So we're going to start with that, which is the fact that we got a little bit of Grand Theft Auto 6 I wouldn't say leaks. Well, I guess Rockstar would probably. Yeah, Rockstar would probably consider them leaks, but for the most part, they're just like, they're from Bloomberg. Basically, the big news is that there's going to be, from what we could tell, two protagonists, and it's going to be kind of a Bonnie and Clyde thing, and one of them is a Latina female. So that'll be your first female playable character in Grand Theft Auto, unless you played as a female in GTA Online, like I do. But yeah, this is kind of something that's kind of been rumored for a long time. I don't know if it was just wishful thinking or if it's something that people have like really, really like thought was going to happen. But it sounds like we got kind of confirmation today that that's actually going to be a thing. So Jada, let's start with you. How much of a Grand Theft Auto fan are you?
I was a big Grand Theft Auto fan until Grand Theft Auto 3, when I had 99% completion and my memory card got corrupted. So not as much afterwards.
You swore off the series.
I swore off the series. I was like, never again will I find a hidden package. Never again will I do a firefighter mission. Never again. But I've played 4. I've played 5. I've played a little bit of the online. But it hasn't hooked me as much as the older ones used to, probably because I was young and cheat codes were all the rage back in 3 and all those days. And you could just spawn tanks and blow everything up. But I'm looking forward to 6. I'm definitely going to give it the old college try, like I do with all of them. Hopefully this one will stick with me further. I think I made it like, I don't know, 2/3 through the campaign of 5. And then something new and shiny came out and I was like, sure, I'd rather play that than Grand Theft Auto. So I dropped from it. But it's a good series. It's a very long game, and it's got there's so much to it. And like, I totally respect everybody who puts so much time into this, especially with like the RP servers and stuff like that. There's so much to do in this game. And like, I'm ready for 6. I think that's also part of the thing. It was like, I've just been waiting for 6 to like come out to like officially kind of get back into it. Like, I feel like it's almost a fool's errand to try and jump back into 5 with a fresh file at this point, because I think my old file was on 360 when I played it back in the day. So,
well, yeah. It's on PS5 now, and the PS5 version is fantastic. Tyler, what about you? Please tell me that you are the world's biggest Grand Theft Auto fan.
Well, I'm actually a bit of the opposite of Jada. I only got started in GTA with 5. I just wasn't allowed to play it as a kid. And by the time I was like allowed to play GTA, I just wasn't that interested. But then GTA 5, when it came out, that was like, it was a big thing with friends, you know, playing online and stuff. So it's kind of my first foray into the GTA world, and I've had a lot of fun with it, like over the years, because I mean, with all the updates that they've had for the online and everything, they're really good at keeping these games updated, at least on the online side. I know there was supposed to be DLC, single player DLC at one point, that just hasn't happened, but
I don't think it's going to happen at this point.
yeah, they've given up. Yep. Which is fair. But
It releases a bonus with Grand Theft Auto 6, guys. Like, buy Grand Theft Auto 6, and you get the DLC for 5, included free of charge.
Well, speaking of DLC, there's something else that came from this leak, or whatever you want to call it, that actually has old Mark Medina a little worried. But, we'll get your guys' opinions on it. So basically, the game is going to launch, this is reportedly, going to launch with a single city, but add more locations over time as the game updates, right? That sounds a little worrisome to me, only because it's like, it's never a good feeling I get personally to be told that you're getting a game that like, they already have so many plans to update. Like, I don't want to say that like single player DLC is bad, right? But you also could construe it as like they're releasing a game that's not like completely finished, that they have grand plans, and that they're releasing, I guess the first city is going to be Miami, so we're going to get like Vice City vibes there. But the fact that they are already planning on updating it beyond that, you're kind of like, okay, well, how much are we getting the complete game when the game does launch? You have to assume that you're getting a fairly complete game, right? Rockstar has an incredible pedigree for releasing their games. They're full of life. They're huge. They're super long. But it's kind of a weird, it's something they haven't done before, is Rockstar as basically being like, we're going to ship this full game, but then we're going to keep adding like cities. That's a little, the way it's worded is a little strange, but also, again, it's reportedly, it's not something that they've announced. So I'm hoping once they announce that, maybe it'll make a little bit more sense. Jada, how do you feel about something like that?
I think, it, you know, honestly, with how much legs, how much legs Grand Theft Auto 5 had after launch with just like not adding big content like that, I think it's a safe thing when it comes to Rockstar. I'd be a little bit more cautious if it was like another company doing it that does open world games that don't generally have the most entertaining stuff to keep you really like wanting to play regularly. I think if they're doing it something as like maybe they're adding a city every year and it's like a year one update, we're getting, you know, San Andreas, year two, we're getting a New York, whatever the New York City is. I forget what they call it in Grand Theft, but
Liberty City.
There you go. Thank you. So maybe if they're going that route and it's like every year they're adding like a huge city and a huge amount of content that like rivals the initial launch, I think it's fine. But I'm also not the target audience for Grand Theft Auto. So like I could be, it could sound fine to me because I'm a casual Grand Theft Auto player. But yeah, I would definitely be more interested to know like what everybody in the comments section feels about this. So like, I think this is a good point to kind of put our community question, like, how do you guys in the audience know, feel about this, like potential of getting new cities and stuff? Let us know in the comments afterwards.
Yeah. It's just a little strange, right? Because it's something you would expect with Grand Theft Auto Online. And you have to assume that Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to have a new updated version of Grand Theft Auto Online. So it's just a little strange to have it seemingly be part of the single player. Again, content is never like, I don't think that's, there's a way to construe that to make it where it's like a bad thing, unless you're paying, like, are they going to make a new city and it's like there's not like a ton of content, but then they're charging premium prices for it? That's something that they've kind of gotten away with in Grand Theft Auto Online, right? Microtransactions and whatnot, but the single player seems a little strange. I don't know, Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're seeing the trend of, like, every game is trying to lean into the, like, live service kind of area more and more. And this feels kind of like they're doing that. I think Rockstar, though, they're pretty good about, like, day one you release and it feels like a big game. Like, I know people get worried about, like, I'm spending $60 on this game. Is the amount of content in this game worth $60? And I think with Rockstar, you're usually pretty, you feel pretty good about your $60 going, you know. And I would think, and I would hope that if they're trying to one-up themselves from GTA 5, this is how they're doing that. They're going to have a full game for you when it releases and then expand upon that even more. Kind of like what we saw with The Witcher 3, where those DLCs were like games on their own. That's what I'm hoping. That's like what the positive outcome of this would be, like, you know, in a perfect world. And I'm sure that's what they're hoping for too. But we'll have to see if it pans out. It doesn't. I think one of the reasons people get nervous about this is that a lot of the times it doesn't, and it does feel like you're kind of getting wrung for your money a little bit. So
yeah, that makes sense.
It's definitely concerning, but I think Rockstar, I feel like we can trust a little bit.
Well, I hate to tell you this, young Tyler, but I'm pretty sure the game's going to be $70.
True.
Lastly, to cap off the Grand Theft Auto conversation, is it also came out with this Bloomberg article that there have been predictions for launch that the game could come out around April 2023. or between April 2023 and March 2024, which would put the game out, let's say, fall next year, right? I don't think it's completely out of... if you were to ask me, does that seem feasible? I would say, yeah, probably. You know, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in 2013. Red Dead 2 came out in 2018. And then that would be another five-year gap for Grand Theft Auto 6. But apparently some of the developers at Rockstar are skeptical about that launch date and that there have been bottlenecks in production and that they don't think that that they haven't even really set an internal release date yet. I think fall next year is probably a little too ambitious if there are production setbacks. And, you know, a lot of people left Rockstar over the years since Red Dead 2, and there's been a lot of talks on changing the culture for Rockstar and stuff like that. So I know that there's been a lot of drawbacks, right? And Red Dead 2, you know, the very famous black bars that come in every time there's a cinematic, you know, stuff like that was added incredibly late, right? Like, that was something that, like, the game was, like, had a year to go. And they're like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if black bars came down, like, every time there was a cinematic? And they're like, hey, do you know how much work that's going to take? And they're like, dude, it.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Anyways, so who knows what's going to happen with Grand Theft Auto 6, but Jada, let's start with you. I have 2 questions. One, do you think the game comes out next year? Okay. Tyler, do you? second question. Okay, so let's get a prediction. You say no next year. Do you think the year after that?
I think 2024. I think fall of 2024 is a reliable date, especially with this these rumors of launching just a singular city. I feel like it would have been further out if they were trying to do multiple cities, and they're like, hey, we've got to get this out because we're tired of everybody commenting, where's GTA 6 anytime we do any type of announcement, where whatever. So I think 2024 is probably a safe bet for it. And, you know, that'll definitely be one of those huge launches that year.
Yeah. And then the big question, and I think we have to like know the answer to this, but is this a PS5 Series X PC exclusive? You know what I mean? Like, is this game coming to PS4 and Xbox One, or are they going next gen only?
Gosh, that's a good, I don't know
the answer to that.
Like, I would, for everybody who's got next-gen consoles, I know they are hoping that that's a yes, because they have this feeling of like, oh, the older systems are holding us back. We're not getting the most pristine version of this game, because they have to also cater to the older consoles. And we ran into that issue with Cyberpunk, you know, when Cyberpunk launched, the next-gen consoles, versions A, they didn't even launch with launch. Only version that was playable at launch was PC. Any of the console versions were just not ready for launch. Is the nicest way I can say about that. I don't know. I think they go for both, because GTA is just such a huge title that they want to get as many people in the ecosystem as possible. And, you know, to allow as many people to buy more of that shark card cash, because that's where they make all their money.
So. Yeah, I'm going to say if it were next year, they would probably do both. They would probably do, well, it's a PlayStation podcast, so I'll say PS4 and PS5. If it's going to be 2024 or later, I say they go PS5 only. PS5, Xbox Series X, PC. Like, in 2024, like, come on. You gotta move on, right? You have to move on. And you know Rockstar's wanting to make the best game they can make, right?
Sure.
So, Tyler, do you have any predictions that are outside of the scope of the ones we just said?
Well, I think I have like a kind of in-between bet where I think it'll get announced for 2023 and then get delayed into 2024. I feel like so.
That's a very safe bet.
I think they'll try and go for it in 2023 and then realize that it's not going to happen. On the next gen versus previous gen thing, I don't know, because they released GTA 5 on both, but they were right on the cusp. Like, they were right on the PS3, PS4, kind of right in that area, just like Last of Us and games like that.
I don't think it launched on both. It was PS3 and 360 for a good while before it came PS4 and Xbox One. I think that's about when the PC version came out. I believe
probably about a year, probably about 2 years, I think. But
Yeah. Well, this time we feel so entrenched, or at least I feel so entrenched in the PS5 era now, that it feels like it might be time for games even of this, like, you know, how big this game is going to be commercially, to finally be next gen only or current gen only.
I hope so, but I understand. The like kind of fear that, you know, people not being able to play this game, right? Like, because they don't have a next gen console. But like 2024, I don't know. We say it every year. By 2024, I have to assume that you will have been able to get your hands on a Series X or a PS5. Like, that is. I know that sounds weird to say because of how much of a shortage there is now, but like, we're talking over 2 years from now. Let's just say 2 years from now. Like, if you are actively not able to get a Series X or PS5 in the next 2 years, then there are problems with this generation beyond just like a little bit of shortage. Like, something's going on.
That's a good point.
And the thing is like, PS5 are incredibly hard to find, but Series X's actually aren't. You can get one fairly easily now. And Series S's, which obviously the game would run on, those are everywhere. You can walk into Target and there's just stacks of those. I know that because I just saw them. But there was a time where on Amazon, you can get a Series X for like a week. It was just there and you can just buy it regular price. The PS5 has been a little bit more elusive, but in 2 years, you have to hope that that's somewhat more solved. But maybe that's just naive, wishful thinking. Let's move on. Let's talk about a game that I've never played, which I'm sure the comments are going to love hearing me say that. Knights of the Old Republic. Jada, please tell me you've played this game.
I only have memories of... No, I'm kidding. I've played so much of KOTOR. My favorite memory is, you know, I always play Sif. I'm an evil person in my games.
Sure.
I love just being a jerk to people. It's the best thing to do, in my opinion. I remember, like, holding this dude captive, getting all the information out of I wanted out of him, and then forcing him to give me all his credits and then jump in a pit. It's on, like, one of the earliest planets, and it was just, like, one of those memories that will always stick with me in KOTOR. But I love KOTOR, and I'm super excited for the remake. And so, like, this news is it's a little hard to hear, but you know,
I hope those memories stick with you. So the news is that the game is basically indefinitely delayed, right? It was supposed to come out this year, and then
I knew that wasn't happening.
Yeah, and then people assumed that it would come out next year. The game, I guess, demoed very poorly for Lucasfilm and Sony, and it led to the game being indefinitely held, right? So this isn't just like a delayed game is good. Like, this game isn't, this is not a delay. It's on indefinite hold until they figure out basically what they're going to do with it, which is insane because we have this 15-second teaser that's not actual gameplay. So the game looked ready. So I don't know what happened, but no. It definitely was not.
The CG is all we need to know. It's all we need in games.
With a giant text where they're like, this is not actual gameplay.
Yep.
I read the article, and it looks like they did a lot of work to put together a demo, and that the demo didn't play well. I don't know how much I've talked about it on Beyond, but I've definitely talked about it on Twitter. I'm a big fan of Anthem, and Anthem kind of went that same route where they did a lot to make a demo and then it didn't demo really well. And that kind of led to a lot of, we saw where that ended up going. Right. So
yes,
this is probably the right call, but also just like, wow, I didn't see that coming. So, Tyler, are you a Knight of the Old Republic?
No, I am a huge Star Wars fan, but I never got into KOTOR. I was really excited for the remake because whenever there's a, like, a blind spot in my gaming knowledge, I would always rather play the remake because I'm it's hard to go back, a lot of the times for me at least.
Well, that's where I'm at with Dead Space right now is everyone's like, you gotta play Dead Space. And I'm like, Dead Space comes out in 4 months. I might as well just wait at this, or five months. I don't know what it is. But it's like, I might as well just wait at this point because, like, I don't think the old game, like, doesn't hold up. I think it probably absolutely holds up. But at this point, I might as well wait for the remake. So I see where you're coming with there.
Oh, well, Dead Space, the Dead Space originals, I think still holds up. But the KOTOR one, if you haven't played KOTOR, you're probably better off waiting for the remake. Cause it's a little janky, like it's from its time, you know.
What are you talking about? It looks great.
Well, this is the Wii up-resed version. I think that we're showing footage for. So like this, the Switch.
The Switch version, yeah.
it did not come out on the Wii. That would have been a whole nother basket to talk about.
Motion controls.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, hey, they did it well with No More Heroes back in the day.
Force Unleashed. I don't know if that game had motion controls, but I know it was on the Wii.
It was on the Wii. I mean KOTOR is fine, but it definitely takes some you've got to have patience if you jump into the original. Now I jumped back into it probably about, I don't know, 2 years ago, and even then it was just like, I was like, oh, I have such good memories of this game, but man, the gameplay is a little rough.
Yeah, so unfortunately for the people that were very excited for Knights of the Old Republic, go ahead and just put that out of your mind for now. Forget that that game exists, and worst case scenario, it never happens, or best case scenario, it happens in seemingly 2025. So go ahead and just do yourself a favor. Get unexcited. Forget that it's a thing. That way, when it gets re-revealed, you can get excited again. Mm-hmm. That's the only advice. It's called a coping mechanism. And then we have a few more news stories we can kind of blast through here because we have an interview soon. But the PSVR 2 got a little bit of an update. How much are you guys into the Quest 2? Maybe even the Quest 1, but I only have a Quest 2, so it's the only one I can speak to.
I do not have either.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a whatever the first or second model of Oculus was, like
the,
way
the
back
Rift.
When. The Rift, that's what it was. Yeah. Yep, that's what I've got. Yeah, it's cool. I like my VR. I used to play a lot of VR. So like when I got my Rift, I got it very early in its lifespan and I loved it, but I just don't have the space since I moved to San Francisco to have a VR area set up all the time. So just not as big of a thing for me lately.
So the updates that Sony shared were not mind-blowing, but cool. It's kind of like features that are on the Quest 2, and so it's just good to know that they're on PSVR 2. The first one being see-through mode, which is basically you can kind of like hit a button and you can see through the headset, and you can kind of look around. The Quest 2 has it where you can kind of push a button, or if you're hitting the edge of the Guardian, which we'll get to in a second, it will show you a black and white version, kind of fuzzy version, you know, of your garage or wherever it is you are, using the cameras on the front. That way you don't have to constantly be, you know, taking the thing off of your face. You can kind of use a little bit of a see-through thing, and it works good. So this is just them confirming that, hey, this will have a see-through mode. So if you're watching the video version, like that's basically what it'll look like. It'll use a front camera to show you, that way you're not taking the headset off and messing your hair up. And then the other thing that they showed off was the customized play area, which is also on the Quest 2, which is, it's called the Guardian, where you basically say, this is where I'm playing, and you essentially draw a line on the ground around you, and you're like, this is where I am. That way, if you get close to that barrier, it'll kind of show you like a wire grid, like, hey, you're getting a little close to your TV and you're about to punch it. So I thought those were cool, but what's even more weird about the PSVR is we still don't have a price.
Nope.
But we did get some news about the Quest 2, which was $300. Turns out in 4 days, it's going up in price. After being out for a couple of years, it's getting a price increase of $100. Could easily say, well, that's because they're investing so much into the metaverse that they need to pay themselves back somehow, so they're going to raise up the price of the headset. Or could be a shortage thing, and it's caused a lot of people to kind of be like, yo, how much is this PSVR 2 going to cost? So, Jada, we'll start with you. How are you going to get a PSVR 2, and what is the most you're willing to spend on one?
Oh, man, I don't know. I like being a first adopter just because I like having the newest of the new. But I don't know about PSVR 2. Just like with how much I've used VR in the recent times, I don't know if it's going to be a day one purchase for me. But there's some really good stuff that I want to play. So it'll probably come down to a flip of the coin. If I'm able to get one early, I probably will just go ahead and bite the bullet and do it. But I'd say probably $350 is the top price that I would like to pay for this. I'm hoping that they aim around that $300 price, because buying a PS5 and that right there is already like a $700-$800 investment before you buy any games. And we know there's going to be, you know, big holiday pushes whenever the PSVR 2 launches, where they're going to want people to buy these sets as Christmas gifts. So like parents going out to buy a console and a VR headset for themselves or for their kids, it's going to be a very steep ask to get both of those.
You're optimistic, and I love it. And I love the joy you bring to the show. And you're always optimistic. A ray of sunshine on Podcast Beyond.
Aww.
No prayer this thing comes out for $300.
Yeah, I know,
no
right?
prayer.
There's just no way. I'm really hoping Sony just takes a huge loss.
I mean,
they do with consoles. Like, I mean, nobody, I don't say nobody, but most consoles since the beginning of time have sold almost none of them have sold at a profit. Most of them sell at a loss, and you remake your money through hardware and software like controllers and headsets and games. That's where the money is made for these companies. So I'm hoping that they're going to follow that and just kind of like accept that they might need to take a bigger loss on the VR headset to get the install base there right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Because you know, some hardware, it's make or break in the first 3 to 6 months. If you don't get a big install base and get good buzz going, then Sony could be like, maybe we don't want to put as much into this as we were hoping to. But if they get a big buzz right off the start, they're like, okay, let's go full steam ahead. Let's invest heavily into this because we saw the initial sales. Like, we can ride this wave and continue to be successful with it. So,
yeah, I saw two different tweets, and I can't remember who either of them were, but I'm just going to quote them anyways. One of them was like, you know, really hard with VR. VR has not hit this like mainstream of, you know, that's the platform I play on, right? It's always going to be this like niche thing, right? And then another person who, I think it was Andrew from Alchemy Labs, he said, you know, referring to VR as PC VR makes VR seem like an accessory, and it's not. It's gaming platform. And so I really don't know where I land on it. I have a Quest 2. I used it a lot when it first came out, and then my wife used it a lot, and then we kind of just stopped using it because it is. It's like you said, you know, you kind of have to like get set up for it. And once you play the games you want to play, you're like, I don't know what else to, you know, I'm not going to, if there's a version of the set game on a different platform, I'm usually going to play it on a different platform, as rare as that is. Tyler, what about you? Are you a big VR person?
I got the first PSVR, and that was kind of my first foray into VR itself, and that was cool and interesting for the moment. But yeah, I fell off pretty quickly after that. I think a lot of it has to do with the kinds of games that are on there. Not that they're not good, but it's just there hasn't been one that, other than probably Beat Saber, that has really kind of made its way into the mainstream. But recently my roommate got a Quest 2, and we've been playing around with that, and I was like, oh, this is a way better experience. So the fact that PSVR 2 seems to be kind of copying the Quest in a few ways, that's actually really good, at least from my perspective, coming from the original PSVR. Because those are,
I mean, it's just technology stuff. Innovations, yeah. You know, that's right. Competition, that's how it works.
They come out. Yep.
Yeah. So that's exciting. For price, I would hope under 500.
Right. So I think 400. Yeah. It could be 500. We'll see. I don't know. Yep. it's a terrifying time. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get a PSVR right away. I do like the Quest a lot, but I don't know if I'm willing to drop that much money for, depending on how much.
Interesting thing about PSVR 2, the difference, I guess, between it and the Quest 2 is the Quest 2 is standalone, whereas this, you'll need a PS5. So hopefully they'll be able to lower the price of the VR unit itself, because they're offloading a lot of the technical work onto the hardware of the PS5. They don't have to put as much of that into the headset itself.
You would hope so, except for the fact that the PSVR 2 has some real fancy controllers that I'm worried is going to drive the price up. If you are playing PSVR, or not PSVR, Quest 2, I highly recommend Super Hot VR. That game is...
Super Hot is fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple more quicker news hits. We got the August PlayStation Plus games. Yay! So that's always a fun time on the show. So we got Tony Hawk, Pro Skater 1 and 2, that's the remake, that's PS5, PS4. Yakuza Like a Dragon, PS5, PS4, and on PS4, we have Little Nightmares. And so these are the games that are the, like, you know, quote-unquote free games for any tier that you have, from Essential to Premium, you get those. And then we also got the Premium and Extra tiers. We got an update where it's getting, like, all of the Yakuza games. I don't know. I don't know much about Yakuza, but it, like, looks like all of them.
Yeah, it's the entire Kiryu saga, I believe, if I remember right with the character name. I've yet to play any of the Yakuza games, but this is, I feel like I mentioned this on the podcast in the past, and Shuhei heard me, and he was like, hey, let's put the whole Yakuza series in the PS Plus Premium or extra tier for Jada, because we know she wants to play these, and we want to make it easy for her. So I'm very excited to finally dive into the series.
You only have 700 hours of games to play.
I mean, I will never run out of games to play in this lifetime. Like, I'm really hoping we get to the point in our lifespans where I can just put my brain in a robot and keep playing games after my human body has rotted away for hundreds of years. Sure. I'm really hoping that's the point at what we get to.
My human body's already rotting away.
I mean, so. I think we all are, basically, at this point. Oh my god, that clip. the guy just jumped and flashed. That's I can't wait to play these games.
Brad, what kind of B-roll are you playing?
This is the ARP, the turn-based RPG that they most recently released. Or I think it's real time. I don't even know. I just know it's more RPG than the other ones, which are more kind of GTA-esque, where you're kind of exploring the city, doing a bunch of quests, beating up people. You know, all the things you do in those types of open world games. I think the big thing was I never started these games because I was always confused. Like, do I start with Zero? Do I start with Kiwami? Like, where do I start? So if there's any Yakuza fans in the comments, let me know where I start when this whole thing drops.
The comments are furious right now that we just don't have Max Scoville on. I asked. He was sick. Okay.
Yeah.
He just got done with Comic-Con. He's a very tired boy. If Max were here, he would be hosting. I guarantee you. That was the first avenue. I am the bottom of the bucket when it comes to IGN hosts. So if I'm here,
you didn't go to Comic-Con, right?
I didn't. I worked last weekend. Yeah. I did like every VO for every video that went up. I edited a couple, and then I made a ton of thumbnails. But I was not at Comic-Con. I worked here.
Same here. Home. We were the B team. We got to work from home and do all the extra stuff. So that's why we're here. And some of the others aren't able to make it. So
yeah.
But yeah.
And then finally, The Last of Us Part 1, controversial game indeed, got a 10-minute kind of overview. The game had kind of been leaking, and so I think this is their way of kind of showing what it is. I really don't have a lot to say about this game. People have kind of already drawn their own conclusions as to whether or not it's worth the price, whether or not it's an actual remake. It's absolutely not a remake, but and I also don't think it's worth $70, but we're not going to talk about it.
I think we've kind of set our piece on it. Tyler, what's your relationship with The Last of Us, like one in the remake?
Oh, well, that's a big question, because The Last of Us the original Last of Us is probably the game that made me go for this kind of job. I was going to school to be a music teacher, and then I played this game, and I was like,
Sorry about that, man. Sorry you landed here. Ouch, that's gotta hurt.
Well, it kind of all started by listening to Podcast Beyond at the time. So,
I apologize. Full circle. This is what it's become.
We'll have Max and Brian and Jonathan draft you a letter of apology, Tyler.
Yep. Maybe even like Colin and Greg, depending on how far back you watch. Like, this is, it's 2022, man. Be lucky this show exists at all.
But yeah, this game holds a very special place in my heart. And as begrudgingly as I will do it, I will definitely probably be spending the money to play this again.
Well, I'm sure half of the audience will be happy to hear you say that, and the other half hate your guts.
They're going to send me smiley faces because they're angry. That's what they're going to send.
We have a few more things to go over, and we are very limited on time. But first, we have an interview Jonathan Dornbush did. The only thing that the run of shows says is throw to Jonathan's Stray interview. I don't know who he interviewed. I assume Blue 12. Maybe it's just some guy on the street that he found. Maybe it's
live from the vet. It's live from the vet right now.
It could be from the vet. We're getting a live feed.
Yeah.
It could be the cat. Yeah. So we're going to throw that interview and then we'll be right back to talk about, you know, games, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
Beyond, and hello everyone, Jonathan here, and I am very excited today to be talking with one of the producers of one of my favorite games this year, Stray, from Blue 12 Studios, Swan. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about this wonderful game that I know I've loved, our whole panel has really loved, and that a lot of our audiences has loved as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Really, really excited to be here today. Thank you.
And of course, obviously we have a perfect picture representation of you on screen to chat with, but no, I really appreciate you taking the time, and
it's very accurate.
I'm glad people can get to know the real you at home. I do want to jump in, you know, first off to congratulate you on what feels like a huge success and celebration and joy. You know, we're speaking, I guess, just about a week after Stray has been released, and I just, you know, wanted to hear from you. How has the team been feeling since launch? How has the reception been from your end? How are things going in a post-Stray launch world?
Well, thank you very much. First, I think the correct word is overwhelmed. You know, working for so long on the game, you start to lose a bit of perspective on what you're doing, and seeing all the very positive feedback and seeing players being excited and reacting to the game, and even most importantly, actual cats and dogs reacting to the game being played is an incredible feeling, and we're really, really happy and excited.
And it's something I remember. I was fortunate enough to do a preview with you and the team for Stray, and I remember, you know, the team talking about having cat in studio, obviously, as the game was being made, or, you know, reference from all the cats on the team. Were there sort of reactions as the game was being developed that help you kind of get a sense of how pets might react to the game? Would cats take interest as, you know, sounds are playing or seeing things on screen? Was that something that happened in the development process as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think about 80% of the team are cat owners, and we're definitely all very passionate about our companions, and we do have indeed two cats that are working with us in the studio almost every day. And it was a very nice moment. It kind of happened progressively, but it was a very nice moment when the cat in the office started to react to the sounds or the visual that were on our computers. It gave us a really nice feeling that we were going in the right direction, you know, with this intention to have a cat today is really just a normal cat, and be realistic about this. So I don't think we were expecting that basically all the cats in the world would actually react that extremely to the game, but it's an incredible thing to watch.
Yeah, it's really been a joy to see that sort of blow up on social media. I know for me personally, I don't own a cat, unfortunately, because of allergies that I've been cursed with, but I do have a dog. It's been a struggle, especially with a partner who absolutely adores cats, but our dog, definitely every time I press that meow button, his ears would perk up just a little bit to be like, what's going on over there? I'm a little concerned. But speaking of the meow button, I think the ways the team so brilliantly translated being a cat into the gameplay mechanics of Stray, and that being not just a part of interacting with the world and being a toy within the world to play with, but, you know, the ways to solve puzzles. How did the team go about deciding what elements of being a cat were important to translate to gameplay?
That's an interesting question. I think that there's a bit of a constant inspiration, you know, just living with cats and having them as your companion. You kind of see every day new ideas that come up. But we did have a very extensive list of all the cat things that we had in mind that either we experienced directly or just seen on the internet, because, as you know, the internet was invented to host cat pictures and cat videos, so there's a big culture around this animal. Being a small team, obviously, we kind of had to choose our battles and try to prioritize the one that seemed to be the most important, or the one that will really make you feel in the control of this character and make you feel like you are actually a cat. But we did try our very best to add as much as possible.
And I think so many of them are really wonderfully introduced in the whole experience. You know, it's something that I think the team doles out really well over the course of the game, where you're learning new ways to explore as a catter. If you're interested as the player, you can kind of go ahead and start messing with the world a little bit to figure out when is it fun to meow, or when is it beneficial to meow, or not beneficial, and you learn these things as you go along. I'm curious, you know, putting some of that stuff in there, was there anything, you know, you're mentioning sort of having to pick the battles, was there anything, I guess, that you were particularly excited from, like, a cat behavior perspective that did end up in the game, or is there something that you were hoping to that the team couldn't quite get in, you know, with time and you know, team size and all that?
It's hard to choose a favorite. I think one of the ones that seemed to really be interesting to people is just the fact that you can sleep in the game. You just have the cat take some pillows and have a nap. I personally think that's the most role play way of playing Stray, is just if you can sleep for 18 hours, you're really close to the experience of being a cat. And there's also the fact that you can scratch the sofas. You know, being a cat owner myself, I was kind of always in a bit of a conflict with my companions about this topic. And now that I can experience that and see how interesting and fun it is to actually do it, I can relate a bit more, and I understand how they can want to do that so hard.
Well, and the nice thing about doing it in Stray is that it doesn't actually cause any damage for anyone, so we don't have to worry about replacing a couch or anything anytime soon.
I've seen a few TVs that seem to be a bit in danger, but
they do get. I've seen some photos where cats are getting very close, and it could be alarming if they start to scratch. But no, one of those things, you know, interacting with the world comes so into play with obviously the sort of robot citizens that you meet around you. And, you know, without spoiling, I think, for players who haven't gone through the whole game, any of the specific personalities that you meet, I think there's such a wonderful suite of different personality types that you get from these robots, different thoughts or ideas or just perspectives of the world. I'm curious about the process of going through and writing all of them, because, you know, obviously you're writing the perspective of a robot meeting a living cat creature that they don't normally see. But they're also all going about their own lives. I was curious sort of what the team's goal was in creating all these different personalities with the robots that you encounter.
So I think an interesting thing is that initially, like very long time ago when the project started, it was Vivian Kula, the co-founders and the directors on the project that were working together. And the idea of populating the city with robots actually came from a development constraint initially. We knew from the start that we wanted to remain a small team. It's something that we enjoy as developer, working with a limited amount of people. And when Viv started to try with human NPC, he realized very quickly that it would be extremely hard and costly to have the visual fidelity that they wanted and make it look like nice enough with the goal that we had in mind. So he started to do some experiment with things that are a bit easier to do, which are, you know, robots, which are easier to modelize. And as soon as he started to put that in the scene that we were working on, it was such a huge and deep inspiration. It was raising a lot of questions. It was interesting to see the contrast between the cat being so alive and organic and all the robots being more angular and less alive in some way. And it kind of opened a lot of creative doors in our mind of, you know, how to build this world and make it interesting. And the personality of the robots and how they understand the code of the humans, but in a very incomplete way, and how they kind of make their own conclusions of what reality and what being alive is something that was really inspiring the whole way through the project, and that we kept experimenting with.
Yeah, something that really struck me as I played through was, I think, you know, speaking to your point, obviously they're not humans, but I think the humanity in them, the dichotomy of them and the cat is so clear, but also just their interest in living and existing and going about their lives and trying to figure out how they exist in this world, I think is so present, and what I really am impressed by with the team, and you know, a huge commendation, you know, like a huge congrats to the team for being able to pull it off. I think what's impressive is it's in so few words. You know, you can talk to these robots a bit, but you get really just quick snapshots of them, and that's of course because you're speaking through B12, the robot companion, translating for you. I'm I'm curious, was there, like, when did the idea of a robot companion come into the process of the game? Was that always something that was part of this? Because it feels so essential to me, to the adventure that you go on.
So I think the very initial inspiration for B12 was really in terms of having a complementary set of skills that is a nice addition to the natural abilities of the cat, you know, just in terms of sort of a variety of gameplay and variety of situations that we could do. We all know that cats are not really the best when it comes to interacting with technology in general. So it was quite important to have this set of skills again that was opening more doors for us in terms of game design. But as we were building the character that B12 was and his role in the story, and obviously using the fact that he can translate the language of the robots, same thing, we felt really inspired and saw a lot of opportunities and possibilities of using this very unique way of telling stories to try to develop, you know, the lore, the world building, the characters, of course, and using this with this very fresh point of view was something that was a very interesting thing for us to explore.
And, you know, I think for me, it creates such a heart and soul of the game that we spoke about on Podcast Beyond earlier when Stray first released about, you know, those of us who had played it, of how I think emotional the journey then becomes because you get to have this relationship. You get to learn about the world through B12's lens and get their personality as well as the cats. And I think it creates a really beautiful central story that you have framed here in the game. I am curious, you know, with the B12 companionship and all that sort of stuff, was there ever a time where there were thoughts of making the game kind of wordless, or did that, you know, did there always seem to be like, we want to find a way to communicate some things to the player?
I think it was an intention quite clear from not the beginning, but very early in the project from Vivian Kula to have some element of text and be able to develop, you know, the world around and the characters a bit further. But we do try to use, you know, the physicality of the cat and the environmental storytelling and all the just the situations more than, you know, text explaining these as present as possible in the game. So even though it is something that was here since the beginning, it's something that we do try to complement with a lot of different ways of storytelling, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think for me, one of the really great achievements that the team pulled off here is for me that, and I'm a little curious here, obviously I don't want to spoil anything for people, but I think there's such a clear picture to me that the team knows more about this world than we know. You know, it certainly feels like there is a thought out history to this world and the way events have happened and how they've gotten here. And also just the way the world works feels so well thought out. And what I appreciate that it isn't, you know, spoon fed to the player. There's certainly memories you can collect and you can learn things from some of the robots, but you're not sort of handed audio diaries every 20 minutes that tell you, here's what happened 20 years ago, here's what happened 50 years ago, here's what happened 10 minutes ago. You don't have that, and I think it allows the player to, you know, imprint their own ideas on the world, but also to just get a sense of it, as you said, through, I think, such great environmental storytelling. Was, you know, I guess for me, just a general question, and again, not for spoilers, does the team have that sort of, like, I guess, world Bible, story Bible in place, though, where there is sort of a thought out history of this world that maybe isn't precisely communicated to the player during the course of the game?
I think, like you said, we don't want to spoil anything, and definitely learning about the place and the world is, I think, a very key element of the experience of playing Stray. But it's also true that it was an intention for us to have a lot of place for players to make their own story and their own explanation on what's going on and what's happening before, what's happened before, what's going to happen after. Having this place for players' imagination is something that is really important and that we all personally enjoy in other games and media. So it was definitely something that was an intention on the project.
And certainly I think something for me that where my imagination really sparks as I'm playing is, you know, as we've seen in trailers and early gameplay, all of the sort of city hubs that you can explore, the different places where really it seems like life for these robots is thriving. I was curious, were there any particular inspirations for creating these on either a visual or a just, you know, a sort of general look to them? And then I sort of have a secondary gameplay question, but on the visual side, because I think they're just such beautiful places to exist in for a bit.
So the initial inspiration for the visual identity of the project, when Viv and Kula were thinking about making it a game, they were artists before starting the company. And as artists, they were fascinated by a place that no longer exists anymore, which is the walled city of Kowloon, Hong Kong. And as they were really inspired by the unique visuals of this place, they started to think about how they could build their own world and extrapolate from this kind of environments and see how the visual direction could be built from that. And in doing so, they realized that it was actually the perfect playground for a cat, you know, the amount of passage of hidden things and the very fresh point of view that it was giving on the detailed world that they were making. This is when really the project started to take shape in their mind.
Yeah, these areas are just so like dense with detail. I found myself just kind of pausing and slowly scanning, you know, areas or buildings or just even rooms that I was in just to kind of take it all in. And I think it also creates, you know, you were sort of alluding to it, but they create really fun playgrounds for the player as a cat. And so I was sort of curious what, if you could maybe speak a little bit about what these, I think more concentrated areas, but areas that allow you to slow down and kind of explore at your own pace. What were sort of the hopes of building these areas for players in the game?
So building these open areas is incredibly challenging with such a small and agile character. And I think we encountered a lot of challenges indeed that were quite specific to our project. In terms of level art and level design, for example, I think in any other game, if you add like an aircon unit or a pipe going around a building, if it looks good, then you're good to go. But in our case, it's a new path that players might want to go. It's a new point of view on the scene that we need to work on and make good. So it was really a lot of iteration between level art, level design, and a lot of play testing as well. We watched a lot of players play the game and trying to understand what they were kind of understanding of the environment and how they felt that they could be able to go playing as a cat, because we also realized that the understanding of what a cat is capable of doing in real life is widely different from a person to another. We had people saying that they were surprised they cannot walk on wires, for example, or on the leaves of a tree, that kind of thing. So finding this compromise between good looking, interesting to walk around and play around, and also readable and natural to navigate was a very subtle thing to work on.
Yeah, it's something that I think, especially perhaps with the first area that you enter into, you've got this I think very clear and immediate readability, as you were saying, of the world. I think some of my favorite things are just little touches of, oh, I can jump on that air conditioning unit, but I can't jump on that because it has sort of the, you know, spiky ends on it that probably a cat shouldn't jump on to be safe. And I think just little touches like that and lighting and things like that go such a long way to the readability for players. And I think it creates this natural sense of wanting to explore the world as you go along. But also, of course, between these areas, you do have more action-packed scenes. I was sort of curious of what the team wanted to do when it came to action of, you are still a cat, but you know, I think you have really great chase scenes in there, some other light action that I don't want to spoil too much, but you have these moments that get a little bit more action-packed. What were sort of the goals or ideas that came to mind that the team thought best suited playing as a cat, but being something that could be a little more action-packed than just exploring?
I think it comes down to the fact that Stray really is at its core an adventure game. It's a game about a journey of this character through this mysterious world. And in that setting, the rhythm, the pacing of how we tell about this journey is really important. So we did work a lot on, having different types of rhythm, different types of interactions, different types of colors, and how the gameplay is varied to make this journey interesting and makes you want to move forward and learn about what's going on after. And the action sequences were really a nice counterweight to, you know, the more slow-paced exploration bits of the game where you're free to roam around and understand about the world. And trying to have this variety in pacing and in gameplay was really important. And also it makes a lot of sense with such a versatile character to try to explore all the situations that from a gameplay perspective can be inspired by this.
Absolutely. No, I think it keeps up the pacing of the game, the momentum of it, and allows those quieter moments of exploration to really breathe, to let you enjoy them at your own pace. And then to have these moments where it's amped up, you're really in the thick of it, I think creates such a create the stakes of the world so well, especially for the reality of what you're working for and chasing toward throughout the game. So it's really brilliantly mixed in there, I think. But one thing that sort of combines it all for me, not just the visuals of it and the look of it, and I think the readability that comes through even in those fast moments, is the beautiful score and soundtrack as well. excuse me. And whether it was sort of the sound design of the world or the actual music that plays throughout, I was curious, were there any sort of, you know, main emotions or goals or ideas that went into the soundscape of this world? Because I think it's such a beautiful world to also just listen to.
Well, we have this incredibly talented composer in the team, Jan van der Kruisen, who is amazingly versatile in the way he makes music. He's got really a lot of different tools accessible to him, so he can really explore a lot of different nature of soundscape. And he joined us very, very early in the project during the end of the conception, and he has been really adding such a unique atmosphere and a unique point of view that was really complementary to the visual detail and mystery that the art team was adding. He actually did before the project some kind of circuit bending. You know, this those musicians that are using like old toys and trying to deconstruct them to make music composition and electronical music. Having his point of view on the world that we were building was an incredible addition and was so inspiring the whole way through.
Yeah, it really, I think, you know, brings together and works so well within the different scenes. I think there's what's great about Stray is, for me in so many ways, is the gamut of emotions it runs. There are very tense moments, there are very light moments, there's everything kind of in between of happy and sad and everything. And I think the music that kind of suits to it all throughout not just fits those emotions, but fits the world so well. And it really creates this sort of beautiful, as you said, journey and adventure game that you're on. But to wrap things up, I am curious, were there any sort of main lessons learned for the studio from Stray that the team can kind of bring forward when it comes to, you know, future productions or anything like that? Or were there any sort of real, you know, things the team wish they could have done that the team can look ahead to it for the future? Because I think there's so much great work here. And I think for me as a fan now of the studio's work, I can't wait to see what the team does next.
So it's hard for me to answer because obviously things are really fresh. Like we're still trying to understand and comprehend the feedback that the players are giving. We're really happy with all the mails that we're receiving, really touched by all the players enjoying the game. And the company in the studio was created around the idea of this game. So it's really our first game as a team. And there's a lot of lessons and a lot of things that we learned along the way and that we can still progress on, I think. So I think taking a step back and trying to see and understand exactly what the game is now that it's not ours, really, is going to be important. And wait for this to make decisions about the future and what's the logic next step for us is.
Of course, that makes a total sense, but I think it's safe to say, at least for me, and I know certainly from our audience's reception of it, there will be a lot of fans eager to see what the team is up to next. Before I let you go, of course, I do want to ask, I know that you mentioned earlier, obviously a lot of the team has cats, are cat owners, loves cats. Can you speak to your own, you know, personal, are you the parent of any proud cats of yourself?
So it's a bit of a touchy subject because I have two cats, but I also have two dogs. So I need to be really careful with my answers. But yes, they have been with me the whole way through the project. And this game is definitely, in many ways, a love letter to our companions as a team. And actually, we received a lot of positive feedback. But when we see somewhere that after finishing the game, someone just wanted to hug their cat, that's really the best feeling. And that's really something that is touching us on a very, very deep level. That's great to see.
Yeah, I think there's something beautiful here for no matter what kind of pet, you know, owner you are, of the bond that can matter to so many of us between a pet and a person. And so I think that's beautifully, you know, shown in the game, and also just speaks true to the team's experience, and putting that into the game was so successful. So Swan, you know, thank you so much for taking the time for speaking to me about this game and sort of the creation process of it all. I really appreciate your time and, you know, congrats again to the team and all the success so far.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I will definitely pass the congratulations to the team, and thank you for having me again.
Of course. And I'll throw back to the rest of this episode of Podcast Beyond right now.
All right. And we're back. He's really got to stop this 2.5-hour interview. And why was he wearing a top hat? Is that a thing?
He forgot his... He was also wearing a tie for once. It was really strange. Like, we predicted...
He wore the tie?
A tie of all days.
He's making me look like an idiot right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're done with news. We legit have like 6 minutes to get through the rest of this. So we're going to do a very quick what we're playing segment. Me and Tyler both got to play some new games that aren't out yet. And so we're going to now talk about those. First, I played and previewed, you can see it on IGN, Disney Dreamlight Valley, which is the Animal Crossing Stardew Valley kind of life simulator that's themed around Disney. I thought the game was very fun. In the preview phase, I didn't really get to see... It is a live service game, so I didn't really get to see the battle pass. I didn't get to see what the microtransactions look like. But in the form that I got to play, I thought it was pretty fun. It's a little bit different than something like Animal Crossing, right? Like, you don't really have to sleep in the game. You can get your energy back, like, super fast. Crops grow really quick. It's really about just building and dressing your character up, but I thought it was fun. And look, there's me. There's my name. And I was pretty addicted to it. And there's a few other people on staff that had been playing it as well that like it a lot. And I know there's a lot of people looking forward to it. So if you're interested, go watch my preview. There's a lot of gameplay in it. And I think it was a good time. It comes out in September, but it's free to play. So who knows what that ends up looking like. But probably more interesting is Tyler got to play the new Saints Row game. There was a preview event 2 weeks ago, and so you got to go to that. What did you think of the game, Tyler?
Yeah, it was a good time. JR actually wrote the preview for us. Mm-hmm. I was just there on a social level, getting B-roll of the little party they threw for us and as much, you know, behind the scenes stuff as it could. But yeah, we got to play about 4 hours of the game. It was pretty much right from the beginning of the game. We started a new game, and it took us through the tutorial, the character builder, if we hadn't already done the boss factory, which a few of us were late due to some plane delays, so I didn't get to do the boss factory thing the night before. But it's good. It feels, it feels very GTA kind of style, with your cell phone giving you missions and stuff like that. And changing your wardrobe. You can do it from anywhere. You don't have to be like in a closet to change your wardrobe. You can literally do it on the spot. It feels, I was talking to my friends about this, and I was trying to like relate it to different things, and it feels in its mission structure very Ubisoft. It feels like there's tiers, like there's main missions, side missions, and then just kind of like there were some Hitman missions where it's just like go assassinate this guy that you could find just laying about the world.
It sounds like, you know, Saints Row 3 and 4,
yeah.
But also possibly like Watch Dogs without the hacking.
Yeah. A lot of those vibes. And then the comedy is kind of the thing that differentiates it. It's got that, you know, wacky Saints Row comedy. But the characters feel cool. I like their dynamic. They're all four roommates just trying to like live paycheck to paycheck. But they all are from different factions, the different factions that you're fighting in the game. So they all kind of have their different quirks. But then they all kind of decide, hey, let's do our own thing together, the four of us. And that's kind of the beginning of it. Driving was a big thing in the game. As you can see, this is actually my gameplay. It was fun. They added a like side swipe mechanic that feels really good when you kind of destroy someone. But yeah, I think it's in a good place. I had a game breaking bug that we had to actually restart the game for. So it's still in that kind of like, you know, they're doing the final touches, I feel like. But yeah.
Those type of bugs are common with these early preview builds. Like, Mark, you and me, we've been to so many preview builds, like, not together, but, well, actually together because I was at another outlet.
Yeah, we were there.
We ran into each other time. And I fall in holes all the time in my games. So, like, I constantly had to, like, pull people over in other games and stuff like that. So, like, you know, I'm not too worried about a game-breaking bug in this, like, early preview event where they're, like, really pushing everything to just, like, get a play test, basically.
Because a lot of the times, you know, the sentiment would be like, oh, this game comes out in a few weeks. If it's got bugs, that's a little scary. And it's like, yeah, but I'm not going to speak for 2K, but this build may be a month or two old that you're playing, right? Like, that's usually how it is. I just was talking about Disney Dreamlight Valley. As I was playing it, like, it was getting updates on Steam all the time, because you can tell that they're just like actively working. And that actually happens a lot when we preview games, where they'll tell us like, hey, after this date, we're pushing out a big update. So like, maybe try to capture more footage from that, but you can play it now. So it's a dance when it comes to previewing stuff. Okay. We really, really got to bounce. So Jada, I don't know why I'm wearing a top hat now. Probably because I'm the host.
Amazing. You're the host. You're fancy. You're nice and fancy.
Jada, you played Stray. You like it?
Yeah, I finished it. I've got the Can't Catch Me, the cat.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Trailer or trophy. It took me about 10, 15 minutes or whatnot. Yeah,
that's a rough one.
I figured out the pattern and like kind of the trick to doing it early, as well as there's the fact that there's two paths that split and one path is easier than the other halfway through it. So for those of you who are still trying to get that chapter one trophy, hug the left side. That usually works. That's my quick tip for it. I have a whole video that I recorded for it, and maybe we'll talk about it next week on Beyond. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe we'll bring back trophy tips. Other than that, Nobody Saves the World, and that game is fantastic. If you love RPGs where you can transform into either a mermaid or a horse or an egg and beat up a bunch of baddies, it might be up your alley. I would give it a shot.
Nice. Yeah, I got the Catnum trophy. First Stray.
Nice.
It's very easy. It's a very fun platinum. The catch one is definitely like the more frustrating one, but you know, like you said, if you played enough times, you'll get it eventually. It's not too bad. Yep. And it's funny, I needed to capture, we have a mod up, or a video of a mod of the Garfield. And so I played it on PC and I had to get through that part, and I did it just like on the first try. Like it just happened. I don't know. Maybe the PC version's easier. Okay. So that is going to do it for this episode of Podcast Beyond. I'm sorry we have to rush out of here, but with the Stray interview, that takes up a lot of our time. And Jada has to go to the vet, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. So, you know, we got to do what we got to do. But yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at your various Twitter tags. Mine is Mark_Medina. Jada is Jada Arena.
Jada_Rita.
Tyler is something.
Tyler's new groove.
Tyler's new groove. So shoot him a follow. The only thing I could say at the end of this episode is I'm sorry. If you're still here, I apologize. And Dornbush will hopefully be back, and you'll never have to do this again. But until then, beyond.
Beyond.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.